The words of reflection today were written by Michael Chabon in an article called The True Meaning of Nostalgia, which appeared in The New Yorker in 2017. I have always been, to a fault it has seemed at times, a good boy. At family gatherings, at weddings and bar mitzvahs, I always felt a sense of dutifulness about hanging out with the old people, enduring their interrogations, remedying their ignorance of baffling modern phenomena, and above all, listening to their reminiscences. The dutifulness of a good boy is not, of course, the whole explanation. I'm not that good. The thing is, I have always wanted to hear the stories, the memories, the remembrances of vanished Brooklyn or vanished South Philly or even dim and sepia-toned and far away vanished Elisabethgrad, vanished Vilna. My work has at times been criticized for being overly nostalgic or too much about nostalgia, but it is not nostalgia's fault if fault is to be found. Nostalgia is a valid, honorable, ancient human emotion. The nostalgia that I write about, that I study, that I feel, is the ache that arises from the consciousness of lost connection. Nostalgia, most truly and most meaningfully, is the emotional experience, always momentary, always fragile, of having what you lost or never had, of seeing what you missed seeing, of meeting the people you missed knowing, of sipping coffee in the storied cafes that are now hot yoga studios. It's the feeling that overcomes you when some minor vanished beauty of the world is momentarily restored, whether summoned by art or by the accidental enchantment of a painted advertisement for Sensen, say, or Bromo Seltzer, hidden for decades, then suddenly revealed on a brick wall when a neighboring building is torn down. In that moment, you are connected. You have placed a phone call directly into the past and heard an answering voice.
In a few minutes, we'll be doing a fun walk down memory lane with a slideshow quiz that Aaron has put together. But before that, I wanted to take just a few minutes to lift up some highlights from the history of this congregation over the past 60 years. Long before Penny Barney Long put that ad in a local paper to bring together our founding members, Universalism had a presence here in Pensacola. In fact, from 1898 to 1935, there was evidence of Universalist gatherings, including the ordination of a woman named Athalia Irwin to the Universalist ministry in 1902, and she served as minister here for the following 2 years. Of course, when Penny Long put that ad in the paper back in 1958, there were several years that the burgeoning group met in homes in various locations around the city. Many of these places are documented in the photo display that's usually in our back hallway when we're not under construction, a hall that we call Heritage Hall, fittingly. And Erin included some of those photos last night in the wonderful slideshow that she prepared for the gala dinner. The Scott Street house was purchased in 1965, and the adjacent house was added for religious education classes. The Pensacola UU Fellowship name was adopted officially in 1974, a change from its earlier name, simply the Unitarian Fellowship. In 1987, the Charitable Trust was created, as we heard last night from that wonderful interview that Bob Gerald recorded with Barbara Goggins. It was that same year of 1987 that the first Martin Luther King parade was organized, and We have participated in the parade every year since, and for many of those years were the only white organization represented. A year later in 1988, the 30th anniversary was celebrated, and Penny Barney Long was our special guest, and the first time capsule was built by Ron Berthelot, with beautiful lettering, of course, by our own John J.J. Jackson. The same time capsule that we used and buried, was that just last weekend after the service, in preparation for the 75th anniversary. From 1989 through the next years, PUF was very involved in a series of community forums. I saw the song, was it Poof the Magic Dragon Variation Words? That's why it was in my head. Okay, thank you. PUF was involved in a series of community forums on race relations and women's right to access abortion. It was on March 10th of 1993 that the first murder of an abortion provider occurred at the Pensacola Clinic with the shooting of Dr. David Gunn. During this important time in the life of the congregation, our city and the nation, in a swirl of controversy, several of our brave members served as escorts for women visiting the two health clinics that provided various reproductive health services, including abortion. On July 29th of 1994, the second murders took place. This time with the killing of Dr. Bayard Britton and a beloved member of this congregation, the retired Lieutenant Colonel Jim Barrett, who was 74 years old at the time, and for whom our beautiful grand piano is dedicated. Jim's wife, June Barrett, was also wounded, but remained active in our community and in the other places that she lived when she moved away. A memorial plaque just outside of our front door is there with the names of all of those who were killed during this tragic era in our city, deaths caused by domestic terrorists. It was in 1997 that the congregation was able to purchase this wonderful building as a result of a Miracle Sunday that Barbara Goggins was talking about last night. And the following year, in a bumpy, difficult process, the name was changed from POOF to our current name, the UU Church of Pensacola. And since then, we have revisited the idea of changing the name several times over the years. So perhaps a name change is still in our future. Our minister emeritus, Reverend Bob Eddy, started serving the congregation as an interim first in 1999, the same year that Linda Cobb was designated as the volunteer director of religious education. Reverend Bob served off and on from 1999 to 2005, when he was honored with the title of Minister Emeritus. The year 2000 was the first year that we participated in our local Earth Day Festival, and it was the year that we began our beautiful memorial garden. We've weathered all kinds of other storms after those years of clinic violence, with an unfortunate run of hurricanes along the Gulf Coast. You may recall 2004 brought major damage to the area, including to the homes of many of our members, with Hurricane Ivan. The next year brought Dennis and Katrina, bringing additional wreckage. When I was called to serve here in 2006, the city was still recovering from Ivan. Fortunately, many churches and other organizations came together in a coalition to rebuild the city, and one of those coalitions is called BRACE, the Be Ready Alliance to Coordinate for Emergencies. And over the years, we have participated in their programs, including our neighborhood cluster groups and our phone tree for emergency preparedness, but we also participated in the Unite Escambia Poverty Solutions team as one of several teams that also emerged after the destruction from Hurricane Ivan. But the congregation and its members have always been involved in the larger community in so many ways that there's not enough time to talk about it today. So on May 6th, I'm going to be expanding our walk down memory lane to talk about our activism in the larger community, but also our family life and music life here around the church. Today, I'm going to just highlight some of the building and name changes and those kinds of things. In 2008, we celebrated our 50th anniversary, and we have some wonderful mementos from that time, including the awesome book that Barbara Goggins and Dolly Berthelot put together and that we have still available. There's so much wonderful, rich history and so nicely written in here called Memories and Milestones. And of course, there's also our beautiful chalice quilt, which is underneath the screen there. Our chalice made of hands, both our hands and lovingly made by the hands of our members, and it was a project that was coordinated, I believe, by Penny Featherstone. Yep. In the past 12 years since I've been here, there have been quite a few changes to our building. Since we are currently in the glow of our most recent renovation with our amazing new kitchen, and if you haven't seen it, you got to go back there and maybe put your sunglasses on because it's all shiny and bright. So we have the new kitchen and also the beautiful ladies' restroom is so elegant back there. But we've had several other building improvements, so I want to remind you about those. One, thanks to Nathan Wolverton and his Eagle Scout service project, we added a wonderful children's playground to the back porch. We have new wonderful flooring throughout the building that was a wonderful gift, including in our foyer. The sanctuary renovation that we've been enjoying with the new ceiling, the lighting, the flooring, all of that was coordinated by Nancy Hagman, and a lot of people were involved. The reconstruction of the front of this sanctuary, the chancel area, and the adding of our whole multimedia capability was organized by Jack Wolverton, and lots of people bought hymnals and chairs and dedications of loved ones as we expanded our sanctuary and building use. We also got new lighting and skylights, and it has been within the last 12 years that the memorial plaque was added to our beautiful memorial garden, and it's become such a special place for so many reasons. So these are some of the tangible highlights of our 60-year history, especially that have to do with our church home, the building, and who we are, who we're known by. But again, on May 6th, I'll be kind of picking up where I'm leaving off here so that we have time to do this fun quiz. And I'll be sharing more of how this congregation has positively impacted our own members, but also the larger community in so many ways. And all of that affirming our core Unitarian Universalist values. So put on your thinking caps and get ready for a fun quiz that Aaron is going to be our game show host.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay, Reverend Julie, characterized this as a quiz, but I have to stress that I don't know the answers. There's a reason why all of my readings centered upon telling stories, because you're going to tell me the answers. And I'm hoping that when I just sort of randomly picked things out of the archives that caught my eye or that interested me or that I wanted to know the answer to. So I'm hoping there's people here today who can tell me the answers. And if it turns out that no one knows the story, we'll just enjoy it and wonder and move on. All right. Big button, right? Why don't I turn it around? Nope, laser. There we go. Okay. So this was an article I came across, and I don't know if anyone in this room was here in 1967, but I just thought it was interesting. Was anybody here, or does anyone know the story of what happened this night? We've had a few break-ins since then.
Can you read the headline?
Yeah, the headline says, "Burglars hit church, get $1." And it was dated, somebody put January 11th or 12th, 1967. But apparently it was back on Scott Street, and they robbed the Sunday school coin box. And someone called an official of the church to report that color crayons and some scissors were laying strewn about on the lawn of the church. So apparently there was some vandalism involved as well. Does anyone know, have anything to add to this story? We're just going to enjoy it and be okay. All right. This was a list of committee chairs from 1969. And it was written by Fred Barnett. But I thought it was just interesting to know the committees that we had at the time. There was finance, education, bulletin, publicity, social, interior decoration, and the building. And I'm sure you'll recognize some of the names up there. So is anyone here who remembers that time and maybe can tell us a little bit about the development of the ministry teams or where things went? Too many young people here today. Yeah, if I can see them. Is that Fianne Ross at the top at finance? Fiene. Thank you. See, I knew I'd get some help from the audience eventually. Don Marin. Flo Fulweiler did the bulletin. Huldah Carrastro was in charge of publicity. Chad Krim was in charge of the social committee. Was that the one that the Krim building was named after? Okay. Interior decorations was Charlotte Danley. And Don Danley was in charge of the building. Did everyone hear that? The Krim building was the first RE building. And it was the shed out in back of 904 Scott Street, wasn't it? Yeah. There's lots of pictures of people working on refurbishing that.
And tearing it down.
Okay, this was a set of Puff Future Poof. Sorry. Yep. Oh, you can tell who's a newcomer. Future goals. And I'm assuming, was this drawn by Mike Huey or was that J.J. Jackson? Okay. All right. But I just thought it was interesting. It starts in the 50s and 60s with the foothold years. And then the 70s were the growing and holding years. The 80s were the development and decision years. And then, of course, it just kind of goes off into the future because that was a while back. We'll have to do a continuation and figure out what the 90s and aughts were. All right, can anyone tell me why Eleanor Jahnke got the Rose Between My Toes Award for running through the hothouse for UU in 1985? I've always wondered about this. Can you tell me?
I'm really not sure about the Rose Between Your Toes Award, but for a long time, Eleanor was in charge of bringing a flower to church on Sunday, and she would bring a pretty camellia or something and just lay it on the dais. But that, I don't know if it's related or not, but yeah.
That's interesting to know, even if it's not related. Thank you.
And I believe that there were some great stories of Bruno Jahnke actually like walking on his hands into the building. And for those of you who don't know the story of Eleanor and Bruno Jahnke, they're an amazing couple. And even as older people, kind of like actually Jerry and Bob Eddy with their cycling, they put a lot of the younger folks kind of to shame with their nimbleness and dexterity and just energy levels.
I pulled this article out, and I'm sure there are finally maybe some folks who remember this day, but if you see the red circle, this was a news article about our moving to this building, and I just found it interesting that it says, at the end of Sunday service, members will put the church's chairs into their own cars, drive to the new location, and place the chairs in the sanctuary. Is there anybody Is there anybody here that did that that day? You had. Tell us about the move.
Well, we all gathered outside the Scott Street building, and we kind of unloaded it, and particularly people with pickup trucks. We certainly loaded them up, and then smaller cars could take a little bit. So it was a rigorous activity.
Was pretty much everything moved that way, or did you?
I don't fully remember. I think Bill might have a better idea, but no.
Got something for Bill to talk about later anyway. Yeah, and as Georgiana pointed out, it was the old brown chairs from Scott Street. It wasn't these lovely new brown and yellow. Yeah, so maybe it's a good thing we didn't have these chairs then. These things are heavy. All right, this has always puzzled me. Can anyone tell me about the Woodland Retreat?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in between 904 and this church, we had a future facilities group that bought a lot to build on. Actually, I'm now almost ashamed to say I'm the one that found the lot. It was a beautiful lot. I still envision the gorgeous new church we could have had on it. However, over time, it was decided by more practical people who knew things that I certainly didn't know and many of us didn't know, that it was simply too much effort. It was hills and water view, and I mean gorgeous. but anyway, it was too much for us to make into the property it would need to be. But we sold it, and I think didn't lose money and might have made a little bit on it. So yeah, so for a while, it was our Woodland Retreat.
I like that. All right. This was the first yard sale.
Well, and I don't think it was the first. I know about this one.
Okay.
So I'll speak to it a little bit.
She says it's the first yard sale, but I probably thought it might have been the first yard sale when it was actually Jennifer Morris who came up to me and said, we ought to have a yard sale. And this, I guess, was in 2008 or 2009, and so she kind of spearheaded it, and Dolores jumped in, and then I was then educated by some folks who had been around longer that there had actually been yard sales previously, and this one was turned into the small one that then kind of sparked the big yard sales that we've had ever since. But it started really with the idea of Jennifer Morris and just a few of us, I said, sure, let's go for it. And it turned into a good thing because now we have an biannual tradition that we get lots of treasures and make some good money and lots of people get involved. So, and for those of you who might not know this, you know, Jennifer Morris and her two daughters moved out to Portland, Oregon, and they're very well established there and participating with the Portland UU Church. And it's just one example of a family that I think was very well supported by this congregation and will always have a soft spot in their hearts for us.
Georgiana, how long have you been in charge of the yard sale now?
2010.
Okay. I have a hard time thinking of a yard sale that Georgiana is not in charge of, so.
Thankfully.
Yes.
Both told me that she helped with yard sales on
Scott Street. Oh. Did everyone hear that? In order not to pay taxes on our property, we had to use it. I guess for religious purposes. Yeah, okay.
Religious picnic.
Yes, yes. A very thoughtful picnic, I'm sure. Lunch Bunch. Who can tell me about the history of this group? Hugh Ed. Yeah, tell us how this got going. And I'm going to bring you the microphone.
As I recall, the Lunch Bunch was going several years before I got involved. I mean, before I kind of headed it up. But it was a... I can't tell where that particular event is taking place. I want to go back and comment on the Woodlands area just to remind people that it was off of Scenic Highway and just north of the Interstate Highway. Yeah, North Point. So it was a far away from where we are now.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any memories of the senior lunch group or the... Yeah. I have to be honest, I wasn't even sure it was Lunch Bunch. I just kind of picked a group of folks I knew eating. I put this picture in here because this one just really struck me when I was putting the slideshow together as being just so us. And Dolly, can you speak to this? Because that's Ron leading the parade there.
Yeah, this has two parts. This was Les Madison's memorial, and it happened to be a rainy day, and this was totally spontaneous. The service ended with When the Saints Come Marching In, and being a Cajun raised on the outskirts of New Orleans without a second thought, without a thought at all, Ron picked up the drippy umbrella that was at our feet, opened it, and started a New Orleans jazz, what they call a jazz walk or a jazz dance, all around the church, and lots of people joined in, of course. The second part of this is that flash forward many years later, which was 2012, for Ron's memorial, I did a complete service that was focused on New Orleans music and his heritage. And I asked Bill Kaplinger, his friend, to lead a planned dance out, which was a very special ending. So, yeah, life sort of makes circles, doesn't it? Oh, because Les asked that we wear hats. Les always liked hats, and Les was a really, I should add, Les was quite a character. I don't know how many of you remember him, but he was a librarian with a quirk, and he loved hats, loved for women to wear hats. He asked that we wear hats, and many of us did. So this was also in the spirit of, Les would have loved that Ron did that. Ron wouldn't have done that probably for just anybody's memorial, but it was right for Les's, and it was right for Ron's.
May I tag on?
So Les also had a wonderful sense of humor, and he was a wonderful photographer. We have had a lot of his art shown here, and his wife Claudine was a painter as well. But Les was very honest about what was going on with him, and I'll never forget that he stood up at the podium and said, "Well, folks, I've decided that he had gotten the news about his illness, and he said, I've been instructed not to buy any more green bananas." And just his sense of humor about this and his honesty and openness with us really touched me.
All right. I'm sorry.
Who?
Okay. Was done by Les. That's wonderful. Bill, can you tell us about the White Ribbon Project? I think this will probably be our last one because we're running out of time. But
well, this is during the time that we were all trying to figure out what to do to bring attention and bring some resolution to the violence and intimidation and stuff that was going on in the period of time that we had, we were the national center of anti-abortion activity here. When I think of this, the White Ribbon Project wasn't really, I happened to be standing next to it at that point, but this is one of the things, one of the great lessons that I learned. You may remember being talked, us talking about, tell me his name, Rodney Wells was quite a guy. Rodney Wells was a very active member of our church, having come from Episcopalians years and years, and then studying Buddhism for a long time. Then he found us. Anyway, I was president during that time when the assassinations were happening here in Pensacola. And we had different people. We had very ardent feminists who thought that we should fiercely fight until everyone in Pensacola turned around to our point of view about reproductive rights. We had other people like Rodney who thought that what we should do is to invest in bringing the Southern Poverty Law Center teaching tolerance thing to all the schools here. We had other people with other ideas. We had Ann Garland, who was in the pictures that we showed yesterday. But Ann Garland had an idea, and some NOW members. We used to hold a lot of NOW meetings in our church. Anyway, she said, well, we think what we should do is have a white ribbon project and ask people all around the country to send in white ribbons, and then we would string all these white ribbons together to show Pensacola the support that we had. We had four or five other people wanted to do things, and it started to get a little testy about what was the thing that we should do. And Rodney Wells was our social concern chair, and Rodney Wells got in and said, listen, whatever you were moved to do, do it. We're not going to fight over the thing to do. We're going to support everybody to do whatever they are moved to do in this effort. And that was very, very wise because everybody did move forward. More people got involved. And so Rodney Wells and a whole lot of other people had a lot to do with how well we did during that time bringing peace to Pensacola. And we did, relative peace. So that's a long version. I'm sorry.
There is a notebook in the library, along with the archives, that have the letters from the UU congregations that accompanied
supported
their white
us.
Ribbons
yeah.
supporting us, if anybody is interested.
Yeah. And also the president of the UUA came, was William Schultz at that time, and visited the congregation and supported our involvement in the larger community. And there's some movies, films, documentary films that we're also included in. Well, let's give Aaron a hand of applause. And how about a round of applause to us and all of those who came before us who made this congregation so strong for 60 years. Woo! We will now gratefully receive this morning's offering to continue supporting the work of our congregation within and beyond our walls.